Shocker, what was your number one takeaway from Ken Holland's presser today?
Number one takeaway. Well, he was very clear that they wanted to re-sign Mike Smith. So it kind of answers on where they think part of the solution might lie in net next year. No, it's not this situation where they're going to move on. Now, I could see him being more in a tandem with another guy that's a piece of the future. You know, but then you've got that whole Mikko Koskinen thing as well to deal with. So he was definitive on that. Honestly, beyond that, I'm not really sure. Like, I tried to get a sense of, you know, what his strategy will be moving forward, how aggressive he wants to be, if, you know, moving forward he needs to maybe change the formula or the calculation a little bit about how much he's willing to move as far as futures go to support the group right now in their run next year and the year after that. And I don't know. I get the sense he's still processing a lot. The one thing I'll say is that, you know, for a general manager to come out there and sit there for an hour and talk about his hockey club, I appreciate and respect that. That's a lot of accountability a couple of days after a tough loss. And so certainly appreciate that Ken Holland, you know, is willing to sit there and do that for an hour. But at the same time, I feel like there's still some processing internally they need to do to really be able to get the more firm answers that maybe as reporters you'd be looking for in that situation. So.
Yeah, that's fair. Like, it's interesting. He's going to wait some time, talk to the players. Because, you know, I think it's always smart to, if you're the GM of a team, you want to get as much feedback as you can from different players because, you know, they're going to have different, doesn't mean, you know, and hey, some of it's going to be good. You know, some of it's going to be bad. You know, I agree with them. Like, they know some of the other guys around the league. How well do they know all the other players around the league? You know, not very well, to be honest, because, you know, especially for teams you don't see very often, and this year it was none, but except the North Division teams, you know, and you watch games and stuff, but like
did you get the sense that his response, and it was a long response, so I don't want to paraphrase it incorrectly, but did you get the sense that his answer was he's not really looking for feedback on what the team needs, you know, or like he's not looking for that from his players? So he's not sitting there saying, hey guys, what do we need? He wants to know what's going on with the group from his players, how they can improve as a group and all that, but that it's not his strategy to say, hey, Connor, you know, what do you think we need to be better? And that he talks to those guys for that reason. Am I reading into his answer incorrectly?
Yeah, see, it's interesting because I didn't take it that way. I think he basically said, like, he's not looking at the players to be scouts, right? Like, you might say, hey, this is what I think we need from a player's perspective, but not necessarily which individual players. That's kind of what I took. He says, hey, you might have McDavid in it. Like, it doesn't take a rocket science to be like, yeah, I think we need a little bit more depth scoring. Like, duh.
Right.
So, I don't think it was, hey, I want Connor to give me a list of his top five free agents. But I will say this. Ethan Morrow was on the show yesterday. And he said how, because, you know, as a group of players, they openly were talking to other players around the league. Now, keep in mind that Morrow and, it was Ryan Smith, and these guys have been in the league for quite some time, right? The older players, they don't have, like, their leaders have been in the league, like, 5 years, 6 years. You know what I mean? Like, so they know some guys. They don't know a ton of them. But Connor McDavid, I would think, and Leon Draisaitl, when you're a Hart Trophy winner and you're a, you know, soon-to-be repeat Hart Trophy winner in McDavid, you're going to have some cachet. I think if you all of a sudden call up Thomas Tatar and you call up these other guys, just like they did because Tyson Barrie told us, McDavid talked to him. Right, so I would expect that McDavid, you know what, if Ken Holland says, hey, these are some guys we're interested in, then McDavid and Draisaitl should be the guys talking to those players, because that's not tampering.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense. And I think, that eventually ends up happening. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it was interesting. Like, we'll see what he does. Like, he's got north of 25, 26 million bucks, kind of depending on what happens with Klefbom, depending on whether they buy out Neil or not. It is a substantial amount of money, but they have some pretty significant holes to fill with it. So they've got the space, but, you know, I have to be honest, like I feel like there needs to be a bit of a shift in their thinking moving forward. And it's not that I'm suggesting that they've made some sort of terrible errors in the past, but I think from this moment forward, it needs to be pedal to the metal. and not like blowing out all your futures and your like. Not, I'm not talking about, like I said to Ken, it's not about spending like a drunken sailor. But they went into the playoffs this year knowing there were significant holes on their roster. We all know the reasons why, right? The cap space wasn't there. They didn't want to spend the assets to create the cap space, and they didn't. They felt like it just wasn't the year. Okay, we understand that to a degree this year. I don't think they can ever say that again while Connor McDavid is an Oiler. I don't think they can ever approach another trade deadline like, ah, you know what, not quite the... No, it needs to be go, go, go every year now because these guys are ready. The core group is ready. They've got their experience. And you need to do whatever you need to do to put the good players around them that will help them. Like he kept saying, Winnipeg was a real team. Exactly. They were. They were deep. Start to finish, they were deep. And Shovel Dayoff has been a guy over the years who's been fairly aggressive in bolstering his teams. So I just think that's the headspace the Oilers need to be in now. That, you know, preserving a first-round pick when you have the cap space and the opportunity to add a piece that they clearly need, I think gone are the days of saying, ah, we're not willing to move that first. You know, you get your team what they need to take a run now because that's the window they're in. So I just think there needs to be a shift in the mindset from this year moving forward, and I was trying to get to capture a little bit of his mindset on that, and my sense is there isn't going to be that big a shift in their thinking along those lines. That's what I got from a lengthy answer from him. I don't know if you got the same thing, but...
It's interesting about the first, right? I think, like, you've got to be pretty confident at the deadline. Like, you look at Tampa when they gave up their first. Like, they were a team that had been a really good team for 5 or 6 years, and then they did it, right? Like, Edmonton hasn't been a really good team yet. Like, I'm still not sold that next year's deadline is when I would part with the first. I'm not. I'd have to see what the team is like at that point because Edmonton hasn't, like, they won one playoff round, right, in 2017. And now you still have Nurse and Drysdale, McDavid, and I assume Larson, who's going to re-sign, right? And I guess Kassian, but he's more of a complimentary player. Like, I'm not sold Nugent Hopkins is here. So you might only have 4 or 5 guys from that team. So it's basically a completely different team. Like, next year, I'm normally super aggressive. Next year might even be a little too early to give up a first, depending on, unless it's a guy that has term. That's
And I mean, what I would say to that is wow. Like, I don't know what you would be waiting for. And I guess we're talking about a hypothetical because, sure, you got to evaluate the team and such. But if the Oilers aren't in a position next year to move their first, to bolster their lineup, to be able to go on a real good playoff run, then they didn't do their jobs this summer. Or someone didn't do their job during the regular season. $25 million in cap space, money to spend, holes that need to be filled. They should hit next year's trade deadline looking to add a guy or two that can put them over the top. That should be the position they're in by the trade deadline next year. And if they're in a position where they've had an excellent regular season and where it's very clear what the needs are, like it was this year, and they hang on to their first rather than go and get what's patently obvious that they need, and some other third-line center loses a draw in the defensive zone because they didn't fill that need, unacceptable. From this point forward, that kind of thinking to me is not where this organization needs to be. So I would assume there'll be lots of talk about moving their first-round pick next year because that's where that team should be come deadline time. Now, I'm not saying make dumb deals. I'm not saying spend irresponsibly. And, you know, I'm not suggesting that it's just that it's that simple. I'm talking about the mindset that you're approaching, though. The days of keeping their powder dry need to be over.
Ryan Rashog from TSN. So then I'm assuming you're all in favor of the buyout, and does it seem like it's James Neal? Like, is that the obvious one?
Yeah, well, I think that's the one that he's talking about. You know, it helps him in the short term here. You make a great point about how it can hurt you down the road, and that's all fair. You know, the other thing about James Neal is, like, you know, how much did the illness hurt him this year and help, you know, stop him from getting to where, you know, his use could have been higher throughout the year. And had he been more useful throughout the year without the health issues, do they kind of contemplate that in a different way? I'm not sure. What's the tourist buyout look like? Is that?
Oh no, it makes no sense. You would, like, you could do it, but
just
you could
minors
just,
is better.
You could just put them in the minors, yeah. And it's, and then we're only, because you can put 1.125 in the minors.
Yeah.
He's only, and you know, he only would count as like 525 against your cap, and then there'd be no dead cap space next year. To me, like a tourist buyout would, it would be like, remember when they bought out Eric Greiba? It didn't make any sense.
See, I'm in favor of them. I mean, I am not pushing rash decisions. That's not what I'm saying. But you're in a position where you've got two world-class players sitting there that are going to perform and they're going to give you what you need. You can't have another playoff where you just weren't able to get enough around them. You can't have another year tick off where it's like, okay, but you know what? Next year, Bouchard will just have taken that step because he got the experience. Their window for finding players and getting them experience is over now. Now they need to have players with experience. They need to have that experience as a group and then attack the playoffs, not, oh boy, just couldn't get over the hump, but boy, Bouchard made some real strides, and now, you know, next year. That needs to stop. And I'm not criticizing them because that was their approach this year. I get why they made the decisions they made this year. But to me, a page turns right now. And that is the point that I'm making in all of this. That it's, they're more in the mode of go. And, you know, they've got a fundamental problem in this organization, Greg. They're D that are going to move the dial are not going to be ready in time for when their forwards are ready.
That's why I asked them.
We've been saying that for 4 years now, and this is where it's coming to head. It's coming to a head right now. Their D that'll move the dial aren't ready. Their forwards are primed and ready to go. And we're talking about Dylan Holloway's and Ryan McLeod's and Bouchard's and Broberg's. That can't be the discussion point on the blue line. The discussion point on the blue line needs to be about an absolutely legitimate top pairing, a rock-solid shutdown pairing, a guy who's a third-pairing guy that on most teams would be a second-pairing guy, and that's the discussion that you have about winning teams, not about two guys that have not even a combined 25 games in the league.
Yeah, oh, I would agree with you on that. Don't overrate young players thinking they're going to solve all the problems of your team because it doesn't ever happen. Like, how many rookies are making impacts in the NHL playoffs this year on the blue line?
Well, and Bouchard might be given the opportunity,
right?
He
could be a third-pairing guy.
Yeah,
sure,
if they don't get Barry Dunn, then Evan Bouchard will probably get accelerated opportunity next year, and good for him. And you know, you wish the best for him, and we'll see how it works out. But if you're going into the season thinking, okay, don't need Tyson Barrie because you have Evan Bouchard, and so you're not going to re-sign Barrie, and you don't make some other acquisition on the blue line, Klefbom's gone, Barry's gone, okay, Bouchard could step in, now what? You are significantly short in your top four. Because if you're relying on Ethan Bear to just step in and be a top-pairing guy next year, right, I don't think that's fair to him even. He's still a young player who is developing, and he needs to be able to, if he ends up on a third pairing for half a season at his age, so be it, right? So if this team wants to compete now, they need to have players playing in positions where they belong, and that can be costly, and you need to guess right on a few guys, you know, in free agency and such, but that's the standard, and the page is turned, and I think that needs to be the standard now.
Shagar, it's going to be an unreal offseason. I've always said it. The summer of Ken will be very important for the next few years for the Edmonton Oilers because they've got some cap space to use. You know, according to Puckpedia, they basically have just under $24 million, assuming that Kyle Turris is going to be in the minors. Right.
Yep.
Now, if they buy out James Neal, well, then suddenly that jumps up to over $27 million. So, that, you know, now that doesn't include Larson and Barry and Nugent Hopkins and Smith and any of that. That's just all their guys. And, you know, Yamamoto's got to be signed and, you know, Kira potentially and all those RFAs, et cetera. So they've definitely got some space. It's not like it's a bottomless pit, but they definitely
have some exactly.
Space.
Hey, by the way, I'm not sure if you've mentioned it yet on your show or not. Before I take off, I just wanted to say I absolutely love to see the outpouring of love and support for Ethan Bear on Twitter and Instagram and social media today. There's just tons of it showering down on him and his family, and I think that's a wonderful response to what was just absolute garbage that there's absolutely no place for. So just love to see the support that he's getting from the online community because it can be an ugly place out there sometimes, and I hope today that he and his girlfriend and their family are really feeling that support.
Well said, Shagar. Have a good one.
Okay, pal. See ya.